You're listening to an audio resource of Boyce College, undergraduate school of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
It's our delight to speak to you tonight about something that we love to talk about very much. And that's, first of all, how we met. And then secondly, how we have learned, both through our own experiences and also just through watching other relationships start and stop and succeed and fail. Things that we believe the Scripture helps guide. But if you're looking for the rules of relationship, you're not going to find those. There's a lot of gray area. There's some absolutes, and we'll highlight those. But there's a lot of principled seeking the Lord and just trusting Him through very confusing times. Would you agree that this is a confusing aspect of life, figuring out the opposite sex and figuring out this whole marriage thing? It's confusing. By the way, just to reiterate, at no point is this a sermon. This is only a talk. That's a disclaimer. That was a public service announcement. Mary and I like to do this together, and honestly, I will just be honest. I think Mary brings so much to this discussion, so I'm grateful that she's doing this with me. And when she called me about the accident a few minutes ago and said, I don't know what I'm going to do and if I'm going to make it tonight, I thought, if she's not making it, I'm not doing it, because she brings too much to the table. So we're going to begin just by telling our story, and I'm going to let Mary start with that. You don't want to start? It says right here at the first, Mary starts.
I meant to change that.
You meant to change that. Well, I'll start. I'm older, so I guess I'll go first then and let, and I'm also the man, so I'm going to lead.
Good job.
That's right. Lead by example here. That's right, guys. This is how it's done right here.
Got it. Do whatever your wife says.
That's right. <yeah.
laughs> Totally do.
There you go. And just nod and smile. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Hey, I grew up in Tennessee. I was, for most of my school years, was in a city, Cleveland, Tennessee, southeast Tennessee. I didn't have a lot of real guidance when it came to pursuit of girlfriends or the opposite sex. I really was kind of left to sort of figure things out. I was saved. I wanted to honor God, but I had just no real clear direction. There weren't any things being written. It was a real difficult pursuit. And so I kind of held on to biblical principles of, you know, she must be a Christian. I want to find, you know, I want to date purposefully. I don't want to just, you know, try a date with somebody and then somebody else. I really felt like if I'm going to date somebody, I want it to be somebody that I would really consider marrying. But then I really didn't know what that meant even. So as I began to date in high school, it was really unguided and with a lot of room for error and a lot of error made. I established a relationship in high school that I kept for 10 years with the same girl, and unfortunately not this girl, one that I continued to pursue and thought was going to head to marriage. I'm so thankful now it did not, but I really didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know how to move forward, didn't know how to get out, and just continued with that. That took me through my college years to seminary. I went to seminary in Fort Worth. And then when I moved to Baltimore, Maryland, where my first full-time position was, that relationship was disintegrating. And the distance in God's wisdom gave the opportunity to break that relationship off. And that was a weird place for me to be because I kind of devoted myself to this one relationship for all that time. So I had to figure out, how do I hit the reset button here? Now, like many of you, by that point I'd been introduced to Josh Harris. And I kissed dating goodbye. So while reading I Kissed Dating Goodbye, I tried to date somebody. And that didn't work real well while reading
who
that book.
His also wasn't me.
His also wasn't Mary. And I'll tell you, this is what, and I think a lot of you are in this place sometimes, you kind of look around. See, you know, leaving seminary, I kind of left what I thought were probably the only saved women on the planet who weren't married. And so you leave, you know, Bible college, and you're like, well, there it goes. I'm never going to get married now. I mean, they were all back in Louisville, and now what am I going to do? Have to marry a pagan or... So, I left Fort Worth thinking, that's it. I've kind of lost my opportunity. And I get in this little church, and I'm looking around, and they're all old people, and they're not marrying anybody that's 60. I know that. And so I'm trying to figure out, well, where do I find somebody to date? And it was disheartening. At the same time, I'm reading this book and trying to figure out, okay, is there a different way to approach this? And that sort of half-hearted attempt to date the one girl that I thought might be saved in the singles group, that faltered, and I finally just said, enough. And I'm going to pause my story there for Mary to tell hers.
I grew up in Maryland, and I grew up with a dad who wasn't saved, a mom who was, and I grew up in a very sheltered home in spite of that, in the sense that I went to a private school, went to a great church, and it was just a very sheltered environment. When I was in high school, I went to a public school. I transferred like my 11th grade year into a public school, and I decided that I was going to have a boyfriend. Like, I had never dated, and I wanted to date. That's what I wanted to do. And so I did, and started a relationship. I dated a few guys just in general, and then I started a relationship with this guy, and it went on through my first year of college, and realizing at that point that this guy was not a really good guy, and breaking it off with him. And after breaking off with him, I thought, you know what? I don't think I want to keep doing this, because there were tears, and it was just, I had spent almost 2 years of my life with someone, and then I'm never going to even see them again. Do you know what I mean? Nor did I want to. And so I just threw myself into ministry, threw myself into the youth ministry, into church ministry, had the opportunity to do just some really, really amazing things. And I decided that any man that wanted me had to want God more than he wanted me. And had to be serving God with reckless abandon, or he would not even get my attention. And so I just threw myself into ministry, and then I ended up being able, when Scott actually moved to Maryland, the very week he moved to Maryland, I went to Africa for 6 months. So basically, he flew into BWI, and I flew out of BWI. It was the same weekend. Crazy. And so that's kind of before we met, but anyway.
Right, and so I didn't know her, didn't know how I would have known her. You know, you kind of wonder, this is kind of like the bird's eye view, what God is doing. And so you're watching these pieces move around the globe, and here comes, there goes my wife, right? And I mean, this is what's supposed to happen, and she's in Africa now. And so this is what we missed at the airport. It would have been a great story if we'd met in the airport.
It would have been great. It would
have been awesome. But
surely married him then.
Yeah, if we met at the airport, if we met on the Empire State Building, we definitely would have gotten married right away. That would have been really awesome.
Definitely.
So as I'm sort of plowing through these same kind of thoughts, now listen, I just want to lift up my wife. She was much more noble. What she said was very true. And she did that for a much longer period of time than I did, as guys tend to be. I was slower on the uptake. Took me longer to kind of make that commitment. And then, by God's grace, I didn't have to live in that commitment near as long as she did. But I did reach that point, especially when I went through the grieving process of that 10-year relationship ending. Even though I knew it was bad, it had become a part of who I was. And so trying to figure out who I was apart from that was very confusing. And I really grieved that. And I remember just really, curled up in the fetal position kind of feelings, which led me to a real place eventually of surrender. And just, Lord, I'm tired of this. This is too painful. And I've left damage in my wake. I mean, now here's this, not only am I feeling this pain, but there's this girl in Texas that feels this pain. And this can't be right. There's no good in this. And so I made the commitment not long before I met Mary that, Lord, I think now, because I was one that just dated with, I was going to get married. I wanted to get married in high school. I definitely didn't need to get married in high school, but I was seriously minded. But when I reached this point, I really, Lord, if I never get married and all I have is you, that's enough. That'll be enough. And that was a tough place to get to. So there was this lady and our church.
And his church.
My church. We were separate churches. We were separated by about 40 miles. Still hadn't met her. Do you want to talk about Ruth the matchmaker?
When I got back from Africa, when I left for Africa, just a side note, I was just going. I wasn't coming home. Like, I had no intention of coming back. I was leaving and going, and there was a set time, but I told God I would, whatever, if there was a way for me to stay, I would stay. And ended up at the end, they asked me to stay, and I said that I really felt like I needed to go home. And so when I got home, my mom had become friends with this woman who went to this church in Dundalk. Well, Dundalk was kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, like living down on Dixie. Like here, you know that area where everybody gets shot down there, and you know, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but in the sense of nobody, like, from where I was from went to Dundalk. You just didn't go there. And she said, there's this guy at our church, and he's the new pastor, and he's the worship pastor, the youth pastor, and I really think you should meet him, because I think you're supposed to marry him. Okay, she told my mother this, but my mother didn't tell me. Thank the Lord, my mother didn't tell me. And well, then later, like a couple months later, my mom told me. And she said, this is the funniest thing. I hope you don't mind me saying this. She said, he's really nice, and he's a virgin. I was like, well, then I better go meet this guy, right?
I had T-shirts that said that. I'm really nice. I'm a virgin. Really works well.
So she pressured me and pressured me and pressured me, and I kept saying, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to meet him. I don't. Well, she said, well, you just come with these to this meeting at church. And I said, okay, I'll come. And I came, and he led worship and everything, and I never met him. And we're leaving, and she's like, so what did you think? And I was like, Ruth, he seems like a really great godly guy, but honestly, I'm just not interested. I really am just happy where I'm at.
And it was very impressive at first sight, you can tell.
I honestly was so consumed with what I was doing in youth ministry and all those other things that I didn't have time for any harebrained ideas from some woman that my mother knew. I don't know. Anyway, so we eventually did meet.
We eventually did meet. And when we met, I don't know where Mary was. I mean, I think she was, obviously, she wouldn't have met me if there wasn't some interest. But I immediately became consumed with thoughts about her. Really just became fascinated that this was a woman that I needed to get to know better. And so using my suave debonair, I had just gotten an invitation for youth leaders to come scope out this new retreat center. So I called her, and she was involved in youth ministry, and I said, hey, would you want to join me to go preview this youth center that's just up the road? Yeah. And she said yes. And so we went, and we spent most of that day at this camp, and they had lunch, and they took tour and showed us tours, and it was just a captivating day. So when it was time to take her back home, I said, hey, I've got this deacon's meeting tonight. Would you mind hanging out in my office for a little bit? And we'll go to dinner afterwards.
I don't think I have time to get you home.
That's right. You have to strategically plan your tardiness. And I was like, oh, I couldn't do that to you. Yeah. So anyway, that was just, then it was, I was very excited about what God might be doing here. And remember, this is in a place in my life where I saw no one that I would consider even marryable under the age of 60. And really no one marryable over the age of 60 either. So this is just encouragement to you. I mean, you're in a place now where there's just, you know, every fall you're watching them move in. Well, that may be him. that may be her. This is at a place in life where you might be someday where you don't see anyone, and God brought this amazing woman into my life. And so we began to talk, and I was reading my book, Josh Harris, I Kiss Dating Goodbye. Okay, what do you do when you want to stop kiss dating goodbye? Where's that part of the book? And we eventually had that conversation where I made my intentions known, probably just about as late in the process as I could. Before Mary was going to say, all right, enough enough just hanging out. I need to know what's going on here. So that we quickly led to, seeing each other more and talking, and it was just a matter of months before I proposed, and then we were married the same year. So less than a year from our first real date to wedding day. And listen, I have never known something so certain in my life and never been so grateful for something than Mary in my life. So the scriptures say that he who finds a wife finds a good thing. He obtains favor from the Lord. The truth is we don't know what we need in that wife. We have lots of things that we look for, but we don't know what we really need. Only God does. So we're going to talk about how boy meets girl, principally. Not step 1, 2, 3, follow these steps and you'll be married by the end of the evening. But principally. So Mary's going to begin with the woman in waiting. How does she do that, since the guy has to be the initiator?
You know, one of the things that Scott, when we were talking, he was assessing the situation. You know, he was assessing me because he didn't know me. I didn't know him, obviously, very well. He was assessing the situation, and he had had this couple who did this service or something at his church, and he was talking to them about it afterwards and saying, you know, what do you think? And, you know, they said, you know, you really need to find someone who feels called to be a pastor's wife because you're a pastor, and that's what you need to do. Well, the next day, this is while we're still just talking, he calls me up and he asks me, he's like, you know, I was talking to these people and they said that you really need to find somebody that's called to be a pastor's wife. What do you think about that? Well, I have an opinion.
Just testing the waters, guys.
Now, so what am I supposed to say? Okay, I mean, I like this guy, and if I say no, then he's what, going to run the other way? But you know what? I couldn't lie. And what I actually
changed my vocation.
No. I said to him, this is what I said, and this just had to be God's kindness to me for what I said, because I could have said a lot of things because it was a strange question, but I said, you know, I really believe that when you get married, you're called to a man. And you're called to that man, whether he is a pastor or not, because you don't know if he's always going to be a pastor. And that you're called to him, whatever he is. And that is your calling. And I married a pastor who is no longer a pastor. And so you, first of all, when you're thinking about marriage, we have these ideals that we set up. But you know what? They all can change. They all can change. And I think for girls, a lot of times marriage can become an idol, like this consuming thing. Like, we think more about who we're going to marry than we do about what God has for us right now, what he has for us to do right now, what he has, you know. And then when a guy shows interest in us, you know, he's just showing interest, and we jump. We're ready to get married, and he just asked us out for coffee, right? And part of that is because we're the responders, but the other part of that is because we are afraid. We have, guys, you don't know this, but every girl, correct me if I'm wrong, almost every girl, one of her greatest fears is that she will never get married. A lot of them, right? Am I right? That no one's ever going to pick her. No one's ever going to love her, right? She's not pretty enough or whatever. And ladies, I will tell you, there are plenty of ugly girls that are married, right? Come on, you know it's true, right? There are. Right? You know, you're walking down the street and you're like, how did she get him? Right? You know it. And there are plenty of beautiful girls that are still single. I know several. Because it's not
about all this. It's about God and who he has for you. And he is faithful to do that. So one, marriage can become an idol. Do not let it. We want it badly. It's a good desire. It is, but it's not the ultimate. Second thing, every man is your brother and someone else's husband until there is a ring on your finger. So when you think about how you interact with these young men over here and wherever, think about how other girls are interacting with your future spouse. Would you want it to be the same? And also, be kind to all the brothers, not just the ones you like. Be kind to all of them, right, guys? You need kindness, compassion here. But don't make it easy for them. Make them work for you. You want to go out for coffee? Sure. Here's my cell. Here's my email. Here's my Facebook account. Make them work. Make them show their intentions. Do not let them off easy, ladies. Come on. So don't be easy, but don't be hard. And when I say don't be hard, that means that when they initiate, respond. If you're interested, respond. Because it's hard for the guys, okay? It's hard to be all big and brave and ask a girl out. The other thing is, if you do start dating, advancing the physical relationship will always, always, always retard the emotional relationship. So if you are dating someone and you are physically just all over it, expect to never or rarely be fulfilled emotionally in any way, because that will become the primary. You will not build upon a sense of spiritual and emotional intimacy. You will build upon physical intimacy. You will not be able to build it. It'll be a lot harder to build the other. Not that it can't be done, but it'll be very hard. And the last thing is, just because a young man is called to lead does not mean that you have to follow him again until there's a ring on your finger. You are to submit to one man, and that's your husband. So if you have a boyfriend and he's saying, hey, let's do this, you don't have to. And if you have a fiance, I'm going to say it, says, hey, let's do this, you don't have to, because he has no rule yet. If you have a husband, yes, you have to. Anyway.
All right. Well, guys, the pursuit, the great chase. It is exciting and terrifying at the same time. And I, with what Mary just said, the same is true. All of these young ladies over here are sisters to you and someone else's wife. Until she is yours, she's someone else's. And so treat her as you want your wife to be treated, your future wife. Be ready to do something about your intentions. And by this, I mean this is a serious matter. So we don't just kind of play around, get entangled, and then go, oh, wow, this is getting serious. I wonder what I should do now. Drop it? Or, hey, maybe I'll propose. We could get married in 5 years when I finally graduate. And get a job. Don't go into this going, hey, you know, I'm working 12 hours at Chick-fil-A. I mean, it's not going to be long before we're going to be able to get married. No, you're not going to get married working 12 hours at Chick-fil-A. You need to be able to be a man, okay? Be responsible. Approach a young lady with intentions because you have thought through how to take care of her. Walk in integrity. You should champion integrity. The way that you handle yourself, with the utmost concern for truth and purity and guarding her and guarding yourself. The physical can wait. It really can. The physical is designed to express relational and emotional things that have already been in place. The physical divorce from those things, from commitment, from devotion, from emotion, is just that. It's just physical. And again, if this is someone else's wife that you're toying with, it's damage. Even if it's your wife, eventually, it's damage. Don't be a jerk. Just don't do it. You are handling a fragile vessel who thinks very differently than you do and feels very differently than you do. Get some help on how to treat her with that kind of kindness and gentleness. Don't be abrasive. Begin now learning how to treat the opposite sex as a weaker or treasured vessel. But guard her heart from you until it's time. Don't toy. Guard her heart from your actions until it's time to make intentions known. Just really be jealous for her purity and her integrity. Serve her. Serve her that way. Now, Mary's going to let you know just a few secrets here about what girls wish guys knew about girls.
Maybe I should let y'all say it. Well, the first one, which I already said, is that every girl really does most. There are some that aren't, want to get married, and they do have a fear that they won't. And the second thing is it's really, really hard waiting to be pursued. You know, you guys, it's hard for you, but you kind of hold all the cards. We're just standing around, girls just stand around and wait, hoping that somehow some guy will initiate something. And we have to wait. And it's hard to wait. So don't mess with the girls in the sense that if you're serious, good. But if you're not, don't make her wait again. Do you know what I mean? Like if she's waiting and then you come and then you decide, well, no, and then she's left waiting again for someone else. It's hard to wait. It's hard to be the one so vulnerable. Girls, we're just vulnerable in that way because we're waiting. And the last thing is that hearts are very tender and very easily wounded by relational antics and games. And how many times do we see a guy dating a girl, he breaks up with her, and the next week he's dating a different girl? You're not going to see that on this side of the room, very rarely. And we're wired differently. It means something. It hits deep. And just remember that. And just because it does, it hit. You think it's no big deal, it's a big deal. It's always a big deal. That's why we have girls, when get invited out for coffee, think we're going to have marriage, because it's a big deal. So everything is a big deal. And we laugh and we joke about it. And it is fun to laugh and joke about. But it's also so serious. Because once you make a commitment to someone, that's it. It's through thick and thin, hard and easy, everything. And so treat it. It's fun to laugh about it. We laugh about all. We have so many stories and fun stuff. But it's also so serious, too, and needs to be treated so tenderly.
Girls, what we wish you knew about where we're coming from. First of all, we just don't understand you.
Amen.
We try. I know it seems like we're retarded, but we just don't get it. There will be times when Mary will say to me, "We're just not connecting right now." I'll be like, what is that? And for her, it's just, I mean, it's not completely tangible, but it is somewhat tangible. She just feels this lack of connection, and I'm like, I just went to work. I came back. I mean, it was, things were fine this morning.
You're not fighting. You didn't yell at me. What's the problem?
You didn't lock me out. You didn't, I mean, so we just don't, we don't understand. We need some passes, emotional retardation passes, and relational retardation passes, and just help us understand. Just want to understand. The second thing is, it's really, really hard to be bold. We are in a society that has not taught us well how to be courageous and step up. So we do miss. I mean, we work up all this courage and all this anxiety to do what seems like a really small thing. But to us, it has taken us 6 months to work up the courage to ask you to coffee. So we really...
No, girls. Hold on.
Hold on. Make him work.
No, no.
Make him work. Yeah.
Make him work. It's okay. But they're men.
And this is, yeah, it's not an excuse, but just help us out. I mean, for instance, what Mary said about, you know, communicating what you really feel. I mean, if you really did want to go to coffee, don't tell us no just to see if we'd ask a second time. Because we probably won't ask a second time. We probably won't ask anybody anything for the next 6 months. We won't even ask anybody where the restroom is for the next 6 months because we'll be destroyed. And maybe not everybody's wired that way. But most guys just, I mean, it's a lot of effort to work up that courage. And, yeah, you know, when you say yes, we're flying high. It's awesome. But when we get shot down, it's, well, maybe singleness is what I'm supposed to have for the rest of my life. The third thing is, and there's no way that you can understand this the way that it is, but we are driven physically and visually. Just driven. The way you're driven emotionally, we're driven physically. Help us. Help us by the way you dress. Help us by the way you conduct yourself. What to you seems harmless or you wouldn't even notice could completely distract and engage the mind in a totally different direction just like that. So just please understand that that's the way God wired us. He wired us that way for a noble purpose, but it has real pitfalls. And we are bombarded with it everywhere, in the mall and on the billboards and in society, and it's just everywhere we turn. And so we really need you to understand that and to help us that way. Why don't you go ahead and do this part here?
Okay. You know, it's not, you know, so much of what we do, we always want to know the what. Like, what do we do? What do we say? What do we, you know, in all of life, we want to know the what. And, you know, it's so much more about the why. It's so much more about our hearts and the motive of our hearts. It's not so much whether you date or whether you don't date. What it's more about is what your heart is saying. Who is your first love? Who is your first commitment to? And it should be to the Lord. And there are very few rules, I think, for relationships. You know, when Scott and I do premarriage counseling, we have this thing we say, and this is for premarriage counseling for engaged couples, but we say there's a tree, and the tree is your marriage. And there's a fence around the tree. And what things do you want to keep in the fence for marriage that you're saving? And what things do you want to have outside the fence physically? Like, what do you do? And we tell couples, we can't make that decision for you. You have to make that decision. Now, obviously, sex is wrong. You can't be having sex before marriage. Obviously, there's other things that are, but it's because it's so much more the issue of your heart and your heart being right before God. We have I have a friend who's getting married in a few weeks here, and it's an interesting story because her and her future spouse here went to Union in Tennessee, and they knew each other the entire 4 years of school, and he started liking her sometime, I think, in the second year. They were in life group, they were life group leaders together, and they did different things. And he really, really liked her. And he waited till she graduated. He was graduating like a semester after her, till she graduated to even initiate conversation till he was like 6 months, like I think it was like 3 months from graduation, because he knew that he needed to graduate school. For him, this is what he needed to do and be ready to get a job before he initiated. But he never even told her that he liked her. He trusted God. And you know what's funny? It's not the what. It's not what he did. It's why he did it. The reason he did it was because he valued her so much and he cared about her so much that he did not want to do anything to mess it up or to harm her. And that he wanted that girl. And he didn't want her like, I want her and I have to have her now. He wanted her, I want her, and I'm willing to wait for her, and I'm willing to trust God that when the time is right, she's not going to be with anybody else. And you know what? They're getting married in 2 weeks. And it's such a neat story. And he led so well. He led so well and loved her so well. And you know what? He's going to make a fantastic husband. Just the care that he showed when she didn't even belong to him, he didn't even know if she liked him. He loved her and he valued her, and he didn't value her because she was some like amazing whatever. He valued her because God valued her and because he feared God. And so it's so much more about the why we do things and the heart than it is what we do. We can get hung up on the what's a lot of times.
Yeah. And along those lines, guys, inside the fence is a tree called sex. That's a black and white area. There's no gray in that. God made it very clear, sex outside of marriage is sin. The other things, people have a variety of opinions on the other things. But let me say this, with what Mary just shared, the whys. We're of the opinion that as much as you put inside the fence, the more you put inside the fence, the greater the opportunity will be to build that relationship on solid footing and then to explore that physical part of the relationship after it's been built upon a foundation of marvelous relationship and emotional components that just get to be expressed. Now, we decided that we wouldn't kiss until our wedding day. That was just our decision. We never put that on anybody else. We decided that's what we're going to wait and do. And so when we got to have that first kiss, it was awesome. We weren't very good at it, but it was awesome. And we got much better, much quicker, and much more quickly.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that we made that decision wasn't because we were high or holy or anything like that, but it was because we had been in previous relationships and we had seen the pitfalls of being physically involved in a relationship and sliding to the edge of that cliff only to try to stop yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like, because we had seen it and we had lived it, you know, you're physical with them and then you're just, how far can I go? That question is such a horrible question, because then it just keeps getting pushed further and further. And we knew we wanted more for our marriage. And we knew that because we had sinned in the past in those areas and had pushed the limits in those areas, that we wanted something different for our relationship. So that was the reason that we did it. It wasn't like some like...
Yeah, and it becomes such a distraction.
Right.
And again, especially for us, we're wired so physically. And this gets to the why part of it. If the objective of the date is to kiss or to make out or to, you know, you fill in the blanks all the way up to sexual intercourse, then there's no genuine motive and the why there. It's a physical goal and an empty one at that point. So the objective reality is, and this is just hard and fast, keep your pants on. That's black and white. Beyond that, evaluate the why. Why do I want to do this? Why do I want to press this? Because the value of a wife includes the physical relationship, but exceeds far more than that physical relationship. So be noble. Be patient. Have faith. Submit to God. Be pure in heart. Value truth, integrity. So the last part is what to do while waiting. And this is just a very simple, simple aspect. You remember from our stories that we had that period where we finally just kind of surrendered. And in my way, I prayed that prayer, Lord, if I never get married, you're enough. You're all I need. And it wasn't a contrived prayer. For the first time in my life, I meant that. And I could sense that. My heart echoed that. And I wasn't distracted. Jesus would be enough. So then I began, and this is my encouragement to all of you, work in the power of the gospel and in his grace to become the kind of person that you desire to attract. Ask yourself the question right now. Knowing what I know about myself, if I met someone of the opposite sex, of my moral convictions, character, desire for God, would that be what I think I should, who I think I should marry? Where I am now. Because we've seen over and over again, people attract who they are. Sometimes it doesn't quite seem that way at first, but you watch long enough, you kind of see, oh, okay, yeah, they are kind of about the same place. When I met Mary, I thought, I've got to run to keep up with this girl spiritually. Because she loves God. And that's what inspired me to do. So our relationship was fueled by that desire to be more of God, more of God, more of his word, more like Jesus. So, love God. He is enough. But get your heart to the point where it embraces that reality. And you live that reality. And as you're pursuing that, you're going to run into somebody else who's pursuing that. Because you know what? Most of you, if not all of you, are going to be married. And you're probably going to be married relatively soon. And this period of your life is about that long. It seems like an eternity right now, but your single years are about that long. Paul tells us that in that 1 Corinthians 7 passage, that those who are married have the cares of this world that become their concern. But those who are single can focus upon the cares of the Lord. Your season of being consumed with the cares of the Lord alone is that long, and then it's gone. There will be things that you can do now that you will not ever be able to do again because of your commitment to marriage. Now, there will be things that marriage will bring to you that obviously are going to be marvelous and glorious and advance the kingdom as well. But you're in a very special time that exists very briefly. This is not to undermine the great goal and glory of marriage. It's merely suggesting that you redeem the very short window you have until God brings that spouse into your life.
It is a really short window. You know, like I said, I went to Africa. I can't go to Africa now. I mean, I could, but I'd be toting 7 kids.
I'd be following her. Go with her. Yeah. Guess we're going
I'm to trying Africa. To go away next week or this week for like 4 days, and I'm like, how am I even going to leave for 4 days? I'm not going to be able to leave these people for 4 days. I'm setting out clothes. So I just think that it is true. This is such a special season in your life. You can pursue God and serve God with reckless abandon. You can go anywhere you want to go. You can do anything you want to do for God. You can go decide to move to China for a year if you want and be a missionary. That won't always be the case. I have another friend who's getting married Saturday. She wanted to get married from the time she was 18. And guys came and went, and no guy was the right guy, and all these things. All these years later, she's 29 now. She's finally getting married. But you know what? In those 10, 11 years, she went to 9 different countries. She led teenagers on trips, sometimes alone. She worked in such an amazing way, saw conversions left and right, pursued God with all she was. And God brought her a husband. Pursue God, seriously, and trust that God is going to bring who he has for you, all of you. that he will bring him. And you know what? It may be here, but it may not be. He may be on the other side of the world. She may be flying to Africa when you came to Boyce. You don't know. So we trust God to bring the right guy or girl. And you know what? He always does it better than we do. Always.
Let's pray as the worship band comes back up. Father, we thank you that you're faithful. Even when we are faithless, you remain faithful, for you cannot deny yourself. And it is a part of your character to provide for your children. And you provide. You provide everything that we need. We strive to be God and to make things happen, only to make messes. And then when we finally surrender, we see that what you had all along was far better. Far better than we were going to make in ourselves. And Lord, the best testimony I can think of on this subject is that 13 and a half years after her wedding day, she's far more wonderful than I knew those years ago when we first met. She's far more than I ever knew I needed. She's far more significant. And Lord, I just thank you that you will do the same as these young men and women. Embrace marriage, but embrace it in your time and in your way. Guard their hearts, give them wisdom, and lead them. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you enjoyed this gospel-centered resource from Boyce College. Please visit us online at boycecollege.com.